This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, I'm Sarah Bivens.
And I'm Matthew Bivens.
And this is the Doing It at Home podcast, the only podcast dedicated to empowering, loving, and honest conversations around home birth. What started as a fun way for us to document our own home birth journey has turned into a platform for sharing birth stories, resources, and education with the goal of empowering mamas and families to make the birth decisions that work best for them.
Plus, we get into the antics, breakdowns, and breakthroughs of our own experience of marriage and parenthood.
All right, you ready, babe?
Yep, let's do it, mama.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. It's birth story time, and we are chatting with Erin Houlihan about her HBAC after two cesareans. So we get to hear from Erin her experience of moving through those experiences of the first two C-births or C-sections or cesareans, however you refer to them, and how devastating they were, and the healing and the recovery, both physically, mentally, emotionally, out of those, and then moving into the birth of her third child, her daughter Olivia, for a home birth. And this is really about collecting and building that positive outlook and mindset, and seeking out empowering stories, resources, a team to support you in what you want to experience. And it's just such an awesome story. And twist, birth happened during a storm and the power goes out, tornado warning, and there's candles and flashlights involved. Pretty, pretty cool. And all with a baby arriving at the end. So thank you so much to Erin for coming on the show and sharing her story with us. We really appreciate her. And I know you're going to love it. Here it is.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, Erin.
Hi.
Erin, we are so pumped to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for carving out some time out of your schedule to hang out with Sarah and I.
Oh, no problem. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm really excited to share the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're a listener of the show, so you've been around the community for a while. Even some cool connections. You know, your midwife, in a way, has been represented on the show. Other mamas that she served have been on the show. So it's really cool. We have a lot of fun stuff to jump into.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah, and we had a cool conversation before we hit record about the age differences between your kids. And I asked this question to you because Sarah and I have been talking about it kind of in our own lives.
Family planning. Yeah,
family planning. And what I want to do is I'm going to publish that snippet of the conversation at the end of our interview. So for those listening, I recommend tuning in after the interview is complete, because I'm going to publish this cool little conversation that Sarah and I had with Erin.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's like off the director's floor, whatever that is, and it's exclusive.
Cutting room floor.
That. Okay, Erin, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your family?
Oh, sure. I am a teacher. I teach fifth grade, and I am married to my husband, Mike, and he works for our state Children and Family Services Department. And then I have three kids. My oldest is Emma, who's 8, and then Caden is just turned 3, and the newest baby, it just turned 1 last week.
Baby Olivia, or Wawa, as Caden said, right? You said he says Wawa.
Yes, he called her baby. Well, not anymore. He has grown. Now he calls her Livy. But yes, when he was when she was born, it was baby Wawa for, oh my gosh, I don't even, forever it felt like.
That's
for a long
amazing.
Time.
That's so
which
great.
Is adorable. I loved it.
And so what got you on the path to home birth for baby Olivia?
Well, my first daughter was born via C-section. I had gone into her birth very traditionally. I had an OB in a big practice. And around 32, 34, 36 weeks, somewhere in there, she was born at the end of October. So it was like early September or mid-September. They discovered that she was Frank breech. Mm. And so I had hoped and planned for a natural birth, at the very least a birth if I had to have it an epidural, but certainly not a cesarean. And so I did as much as I knew how to do to get her to flip. I was, you know, swimming, flipping in the pool myself. I was going to a chiropractor, but I didn't know a ton at the time. And like up until the day before she was born, I finally just like gave myself up and said, all right, she's not going anywhere. We're having a C-section. And I went in for the C-section. And it was right before she was born, maybe right after, a friend of mine whose son was actually born 5 days after Emma, he was also Frank breech. And so we had shared a lot and we were at different practices and she had mentioned that her practice had mentioned, having a VBAC. And I was like, well, I had never even heard of the term. Mm. So that kind of sparked me into, well, what is a VBAC? And at my 6 week postpartum, my OB said, so are you going to have a VBAC next time if you do this again? And I was like, well, I have no idea about it, but sure. I would, that sounds great. I'd love to, like, I'm open to it. She's like, you're a great candidate. And then, you know, I kind of put that in the back of my head, back burner. And then a little while before we were ready to try having Caden, I started going to local, ICANN meetings to just kind of get information and learn about what VBAC was. And through that, I became really involved in that community, attending every month, pretty much, as much as I could through his birth, and at postpartum with him. And then again, when I got pregnant with Olivia, I started going back. And so it was through there that I had first learned about home birth. So as I was, preparing for Caden's birth, I really grappled with the decision to go with a home birth, staying with my current OB provider, because I really liked them. And I really appreciated what they were providing at the time. Again, there were things I was frustrated with. Like I would go in and I'd wait 45 minutes for an appointment. I'd sit down. I'd have a rushed 15-minute appointment. The OB would walk in, listen to a heartbeat, and she'd be out the door. Mm. And I'd be like, well, wait, whoa. Like I have a question. Like, can I ask a question? And some people in our ICANN group, although never coming out and saying specific problems with that, practice had kind of alluded to really being willing to ask questions. And I was a little hesitant because I felt like I was being confrontational. And I hate to be confrontational. And I felt like I was questioning them. And for what it did to me, I felt horrible doing it. And now I could like smack myself for not doing it. But at about 20 weeks, I did end up deciding to interview a home birth midwife. And I started looking into a practice that was a midwife-based practice that had one OB, was really well known in the area, and had a really great VBAC success rate. And while they delivered at the hospital, they really followed that like midwifery care model of care. So I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. What? Can you come down? Sure. Go ahead. Go down through the breaker. Sorry. I thought if I left snacks in the show, we'd be okay.
Totally
So anyway, so I met with them and I met with the midwife, Kelly, who I ended up using for Olivia's birth. And I loved Kelly. I loved, everything about it. I was still kind of on the fence, about home birth, but felt really comfortable because I was surrounded by these women who had talked about home birth and had shared home birth stories through that ICANN chapter. I brought my husband along and he had sat there and he was not at all interested in home birth. And we sat there and we talked with Kelly and she, you know, answered some of his questions and tried to address some of his concerns and our concerns. And when we left, before we left the office, I was like, okay, well, I'm fine. We can do this if you want. So I was like, hey, well, you know, that's awesome. Go ahead, go home and think about it. And so we did. There was a lot of financial, stuff like with our insurance. Our insurance would cover maybe about half of the cost, and the leftover cost was a lot for us at the time. And while he seemed okay and willing to do it, cause he knew it's what I wanted to do, I felt this huge burden that I was putting this financial burden on my family. And so I spent weeks thinking about it. She happened to be going out of town for a couple of months or for a month or so. And kind of just like, you're getting close. We're at like 25 weeks. I'm going to be gone for 5 weeks. Like, this is, we need to make a decision so we can start like moving this ball forward. Mm. And I just couldn't make a decision, and it kind of, time kind of ran out. And she's like, I'm really sorry. It's just not going to work out. Like, I have to leave. And this is a really special relationship. And I think, especially when you're having a VBAC, we really need to build that relationship and trust between the two of us. So I was okay with that. I was like, okay, decision made for me. I'm going to stick with the midwifery practice at the hospital and deliver at the hospital. And so I continued prepping for a VBAC, through that practice, who I really fell in love with. I really love the midwives. And then Caden's birth came. He was born 10 days past his like guest date. And he, ended up, I was in labor for about 24 hours with him. My water broke around 4 a.m. and at 5 a.m. we ended up having another C-section, which was just devastating to me. My body was reeling from labor for 24 hours. And then, you know, recovering from a C-section, emotionally, I was just drained and disappointed and hurt because I had been so empowered. Like, I was so empowered that I was going to do this. And I just thought that it was going to happen. Like, I had read the books and I heard all these stories and all these, I didn't know anybody who had tried and not had it successful VBAC. So about a week before he was born, like, I should probably plan for a C-section just in case that happens. I'm sure it'll be fine, but I should probably just plan. I had hired some doulas. And so they were like, yes, you absolutely should. And we kind of came up with a plan. One of the doulas was actually the head of our ICANN chapter. So she was really familiar with VBAC. She had had her own home birth VBAC several years earlier. So I had a lot of support in that way. But in the end, I did end up with a C-section. Like I said, I was just devastated, and it was a really difficult recovery. My recovery with Emma was a breeze. I barely put pain meds. With him, my son, it was 6 weeks and I was just I was hurting so much. But then we thought we were done. You know, I was always open to having a third. My husband was not hugely open to having a third, but kind of set like a time limit with his age. We're like, well, if we would ever do it, we would have to do it before I'm 40. And sure enough, about when he was 39, I found out that I was pregnant with Olivia.
And, right under the
she was born in August and he turned 40 in October. So him and Emma actually share a birthday. I was like, I got her in there.
So
when we found out we were pregnant, literally we both like, we looked at the pregnancy test. First words out of my husband's mouth were after, oh my God, we're going to have a talk because I know you're going to have a home birth. And I don't like,
oh, wow.
It's not going to happen. So I was like, okay, well, let's worry about that later. Let's kind of get over the shock of this first. After a couple weeks, like I had started, I went back to the same midwifery practice that I had been using with planning a hospital birth. And after a few weeks, started bring up the idea of at least contacting Kelly, because the great thing about Kelly is that she has hospital rates to it. That now two of the local hospitals that are like birthing centers. So even if we decided to do a hospital birth, she could still be our provider. So I just use that. I'm like, well, let's just at least talk to her. So we went in again and we had an appointment with her, just a conversation to kind of just talk about home birth and what it would be like and what our options were. And we again left that appointment, and my husband really loves Kelly. And I think she makes him feel super comfortable. And we left, and that night he sat me down. He's like, look, I know that this is something you really want, and this is the last time you're going to have a baby. So if this is what you want to do, I'm all in, and we can definitely do it. So, and at that point I was like, I'm not letting the financial aspect stand in my way, right? Like, I never do anything for myself. I am doing this for me and giving it all. And so we signed on, and we
started seeing Kelly and went forward with the home birth. We toured like the hospital that she goes to as well, but, you know, planned.
So let me ask a quick question before you keep going on the awesome story. What was the feeling like when you and Mike signed on and you're like, okay, we're doing this? What was that feeling like for you?
I think part relief and like comfort, like just like an excitement. Like it was really excited. Probably a little nervous too. I think it was such a mix of emotion. Relieved that he was happy to do it as well, and that he was on board and he knew how important it was to me. And then just excited to work with Kelly. She has such an amazing reputation. Anybody that you talk to in the area, if you mention her name, they just say, oh, she's amazing. And anybody I knew that had a home birth, most of the time it was with her. So I just felt so comfortable with her too. And I loved the idea, like with Kelly too, like the midwifery practice and that I had been going to, again, the midwives were wonderful. But this time with Kelly, I knew who would be there when I delivered her, no matter what ended up happening. Kelly was going to be the person that was there. And I think that was also really comforting for me, that I would know who would be there when it came time to deliver Olivia.
Yeah.
I was, even now, like, I'm like, I wish I could just have more babies so I could deliver with Kelly. I love her. I think she's amazing. And she made us feel incredibly comfortable throughout the whole process.
That's awesome. What's her full name, and what part of the country does she practice out of?
So we are in, her practice is located in Albany, New York. And her name is Kelly McDermott, and her practice is called Saj Femme Midwifery.
Perfect.
Awesome. Cool. We'll put some links in the show notes so folks who are in your area can reach out.
Look her up. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So what about, you know, leading up until birth or some of the details there as it was getting closer? Tell me a little bit about that.
So I spent a lot of time like researching, like put a lot of effort. One of the things when I reflected on Caden's birth, I think one of the things I didn't do very well was prepare for the labor. And I had done a lot of reading about what VBAC was and safety and research and studies and all of those things. But I don't think I really did everything I could have done to prepare myself mentally for what labor would be like. So that was one of the things I really wanted to kind of change this time. So I read, and I had read Ina May's Guide to Childbirth, I think it was called, with Caden, but I only read the stories at the back. Like I only read the stories that she had. I didn't do a lot of reading of the actual text of the book. And so I read the main part of her book this time with Olivia. I signed up to do HypnoBabies. And I actually had received the kit through my ICANN network. Somebody had donated it to them. So I was able to actually get their copy and use that. And I found that to be really helpful. I found it really hard to keep up with the time, especially having two young kids running around, of listening to all of the tracks. But I did find them extremely helpful and calming and relaxing. And then being with Kelly, and I remember saying to Kelly too, like, you know, one of the greatest things is Ina May's book and HypnoBabies, and you all say the same thing. You know, all of these positive outlooks on birth, I think we're just reaffirming and comforting. And then, of course, going to ICANN was huge, and having that support system of women who were had been there or who were also going through it. I think the summer that I had Olivia, I think Kelly had at least two, I know she had at least two other VBAC mamas, one who had a VBAC and one who was having her after her third cesarean. So I just think knowing that and having that comfort level was so helpful. And then just, I would, you know, YouTube home births and hypno baby births and watch all kinds of videos. I listened to your podcast. That was huge. And I would listen to some other podcasts. I eventually ended up leaving other podcasts though, because while I enjoyed them, they shared all different types of stories. And I really then eventually wanted to just focus only on really positive, reaffirming home birth stories and keep that really fresh in my mind. So I eventually was only listening to your podcast to hear those home birthers and to hear other people's perspectives and takes and experiences, and kind of prepare myself for all the different scenarios that could arise and that we could experience while we were at home. So.
That was so awesome. Thank you, Erin.
Yeah, that's so cool. You're welcome.
You did a lot
of
beautiful, sounds like, prep, like the information that you surrounded yourself with. Like I understand with Cadence, you know, it was a potential VBAC, so you wanted to kind of learn about all of that and read on it. But with Olivia, I mean, everything that you just consumed and all the information and everything is just, I don't know, it seems very loving and just empowering and awesome.
Yeah, I tried to, like, you know, I think I remember I was listening to, I think you guys did an episode on, like, creating your space for Maya's birth. Yeah. And I listened to that and I thought about what I would do. So I printed birth affirmations and had them on the wall and had Christmas lights out. And I tried to really create this, like, beautiful, peaceful space. I have my CD player with my CDs ready to go. And I think through seeing all those different things that helped me. So like when I say to imagine all the scenarios, I don't necessarily mean negative scenarios that come up, but just all the different ways that my home birth could look.
Right.
And all the different things that I could do to make this my birth and our experience together as a family and Olivia's like entrance into this world. And it ended up being so happy with everything that we did. And it really was beautiful. And just different, totally different, right? Like I didn't plan for some of the things that happened. I didn't plan for some of the things I ended up being comfortable with while in labor. I would have never thought, you know, that I would have done. So it took on its own, my own experience. It wasn't necessarily like other things I had read, but I feel like just preparing myself and kind of imagining and seeing myself. And I think HypnoBabies does that, right? Like, have you really visualized your birth and what it's going to look like and feel like? And, you know, I found that to be really helpful. Mm. I had a hard time because I couldn't in some ways imagine it, but I think that's where listening to other people's stories and watching other home births on YouTube and different videos were really helpful.
Yeah.
To me to be able to create the space I wanted to create.
Well, let's hear your story. I'm so excited now with just given what you kind of, how you prefaced it, like things that popped up. I want to hear about all of that.
So Olivia was born 41 weeks and 5 days. It was 41 weeks and 3 days. And then Olivia was actually 2 days later than that. So I had an appointment with Kelly that morning at like 8:30 or 9 in the morning. And that night, in the middle of the night, I felt something different. Something was just different about her movement. And Kelly, I'm feeling like she's like ready or something's going on. So she felt and she was like, oh my goodness, she is there. Like she is ready. She's lined up perfectly. It's just a waiting game now. So I left her office with like a script to go get an ultrasound. That was a Tuesday for Friday if I hadn't had her by that day. And as I was putting my kids in the car we were headed to a play date. I got this like really low backache and I just like, oh, that's weird. And my husband and I actually funny, we were texting. I said, oh, Kelly says she's all lined up, ready to go. He's like, hey, maybe, my daughter's born on the 21st. My son is born on the 23rd. He's like, hey, maybe we'll have a 21, a 22 and a 23. Cause it was August 21st. 22nd was that day. And I was like, oh, maybe. And I looked at my phone, saw it was the 22nd. I'm like, that's never going to happen.
Ah.
No way. So I headed off to this play date and we were there. I said to my friend, like, oh, I keep getting this like low back pain, like crampy back pain that comes and then goes. And she's like, like, maybe this is the start. She goes, yeah. Maybe you should be at home resting. So at around noon, we left the play date, head home for lunch. And after I got the kids, Caden was going down for a nap. I just said to my daughter, I'm like, Emma, you can just watch a show. I'm just going to lay down with Caden. Cause I'm like, if this is it, I'm supposed to be sleeping or resting. So I better pick my opportunity.
Yeah.
And I just could not fall asleep. So eventually got a contraction timer out and started timing them just to see what was going on. I was like, these are like 20 minutes apart, probably. And Caden woke up and I had never fallen asleep. And I look at the contraction timer and they're like 4 minutes apart. And I was like, oh, well, that's not 20 minutes apart. And they were lasting all different times, 30 seconds, a minute, 10 seconds, 4 seconds. It was very sporadic.
But I was like, well, I guess I should call Kelly. I called Kelly and she's like, okay, well, you know, just so you know, this could end. It may not be the thing. I was like, so should I have Mike come home from work? And she goes, that's totally up to you, but you don't have to. This really may not go any further. So I didn't have Mike come home then. But I was having, since I was having that low back pain, one of the things with Caden was he was posterior. And that was one of the things I didn't anticipate. And the back labor I had with him was just so difficult and totally unexpected. So when I was having that with Olivia, I was like, oh, maybe I should go to the chiropractor because I had done that during labor with Caden. I went to the chiropractor. So I called and they were like, well, we can get you in at 3:45. I said, all right, great. I called a friend to see if she could take my kids. And just in the time that I was talking to her, within 15 minutes of trying to figure out how I was going to manage this, I could no longer, like, I was having to stop for contractions and hold on to a chair. And then I could go back to, like, packing the kids' stuff, getting ready. And luckily, Mike, like, just was like, I'm coming home. And so he left and he got here about 4, which at that point I called Kelly back because I was like, Kelly, I don't know. Like, it's definitely more intense. And it's definitely coming, they're coming more like routine. Like they're, I don't remember what they were, maybe every like 4 minutes consistently now. And she's like, well, okay. Like, that's fine. Let's check back in an hour and see. So luckily Mike walked in, he took the kids. I had gotten to that point. I'm like, I just want to get into my own headspace. Like I need my kids to go. I need to come and listen to my HypnoBabies tracks. And I just want to get into my like space. So he came home, he whisked them right away. I actually came in and took a shower. I was probably in there for about 45 minutes and he came home, and started setting up the birth pool, which we had, we were in our bedroom, our bathroom's right across from our bedroom. So it was like perfect little like area to move around in. And after I had gotten out of the shower, I called Kelly and I had a contraction on the phone with her. And again, these contractions were not lasting. I think they were consistently 30 seconds. And she was just saying, 30 seconds just really isn't that long. And then I had one on the phone with her and she goes, well, but that was a good one. So I'll send my assistant up to you. And her assistant I happen to know too through ICANN as well. So I had known her for a couple of years prior. And so I said, okay, great. About 20 minutes later, I said to my husband, I'm like, why is nobody here yet? What is going on? I could just tell that things were moving really quickly. And just as I said that, the assistant walks in, and she comes up and she says, how long have you been making that noise? And I was like, oh, that was like my first clue that things were going well. There were a couple of times throughout the birth that I was like, oh, that's a good sign. And to me, I was like, well, that's a good sound. If you're worried about the sound I'm making, that means I'm progressing here, right? Like I'm getting somewhere. And it turned out Kelly, so I live about 30 minutes from Kelly. That's, of course, the time of the birth was rush hour, which can extend things. And so she was going to wait until 6 o'clock to check in. But about 10 minutes later, it's like, I just have to go. I just have to get up there. And thankfully, not thankfully, just she didn't come that fast, but she came. So she came sooner than anticipated. She got here not long after. Mike had finished setting up the birth pool. So I got in. And that was just, I loved the birth pool. The birth pool was amazing. I was so thankful that I ended up having that. And I labored in there for a while. Kelly showed up and she had an intern who was with her, who had also come. And we have a friend who's a photographer. And she actually photographed Caden's birth, but it was a very last minute thing. It was like, you know, how about like, she had never done a birth and she was like, how about I'll do it for free for you if like, we don't know if she has 3 kids of her own. It's like, if the timing works out, great. And if it doesn't, and then we plan the same thing again for Olivia's birth. So she came, she ended up coming a little while later as well. But I just hung out in the pool probably for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then Kelly really started to kind of, things started to get more intense, to the point where I was saying, okay, like I need to know what's going on here. Like what, I need somebody to tell me what's happening. And Kelly had said, well, okay, I can check and what I think I already know or something along those lines. And that was kind of that second like clue to me, like, well, wait, that sounds like you think things are going really well or that things are like progressed pretty far. And I had felt like there was definitely a point within Olivia's labor
And I can't remember now if it was at that point or if it was a little bit later where I knew I had surpassed where I had been with Caden before we went in for the C-section. And I just felt it in my body. And then Kelly had started saying, like, have you gone to the bathroom? Like, you need to pee. And I was like, I could not think of any other part of my body besides like contractions. And that was it. And she's like, have you peed? And I was like, I have no idea. And she's like, it's okay. You can go in that pool. It's totally fine. We won't tell anybody. I'm like, I just don't know. Like, I don't know if I did. And so after a while, she's like, all right, I'm sorry. We need to get you out and we need you to try and go to the bathroom. We just need to make sure everything is working. And I was drinking a lot of water throughout. So we ended up getting out of the pool to try and go to the bathroom. And as soon as I stood up out of that pool, I could feel Olivia drop and I knew she was left engaging. So we got out of the pool again, sadly, cause I didn't enjoy it. But, I ended up going to the bathroom and I just never left. We left the toilet, which is one of those things, was the surprise in birth that I was not anticipating. The other thing had been, I had tried to put on like a tank top while I was in the pool, or I had bought actually this really awesome tank top off of Amazon, saying I can and I will. And I bought it as my affirmation to myself, cause it was my favorite birth affirmation. And I had planned to wear it during labor. But I went to put that thing on and it was so tight. I was like, forget this. I like ripped it off. Like ended up just like laboring with nothing on, which is so not like my modestness was so not me. But I did not care at all about anything. Even my friend came over, like the one taking the pictures. Like I know her personally, like a little awkward now. I'm like, oh, but at the time I didn't even know she was around. Like I didn't even know she was there. So we ended up on the toilet and labored there for a while. And we ended up getting into this like really great rhythm of, and I think back now and I just find it to be so beautiful, like the support that was in that room. So my husband was standing next to me holding my hands and Kelly was in front of me kind of like on a step stool. And whenever I would have a contraction, she would bend over, I would lean onto her poor back. I would lean on her back and I would scream. And another thing, I watched all these beautiful hypno babies where these people just made no sound or very low moans. And here I was like screaming like somebody was going to kill me. And I never thought that I would do that. And between contractions, I was very like lucid and having conversations. And I was like, Kelly, I'm so sorry, your poor ear, like your back must be killing you. She's like, I'm fine, it's really okay. And then a contraction would come and she would just drop and I would bend. And it was like this rhythm that we just got into. And Mike would grab my hands and we would just work through a contraction and then go back. And after a little while, my water ended up breaking when I was living there. And then we ended up moving to my bed just to try a different position. And I labored there for a little while. And then Kelly, my husband, when we were on the toilet, so while he did his own reading for home birth and he was very supportive, he didn't do as much as I did. I knew it was a very common place to kind of labor because of the way that your body can like sit and like move. All he could imagine was our baby falling into the toilet and being born there. And he was just like, that can't be happening. I'm like, babe, it's fine. Totally fine. This is normal. It's totally normal. And he was like, we can't, Aaron, like, we just can't have the baby on the toilet. So when we were in my bed, he was so happy. And then Kelly's like, Mike, I'm really sorry, but I think we're doing better when we were on the toilet. I think we need to go back. So back we went to the toilet and I labored there for a while and started really bearing down. And we just continued that pattern of like bending over. And I know I had told you guys there was a storm, so I didn't know it at the time, but when we were in bed, the power went out. So the air conditioner in the room turned off, all the lights went off. And I was just like, oh, thank you guys so much. Thank you. And they were like, that wasn't us. And that was the first I ever became aware that something was going on. So there's like a huge tornado warning going on outside. Oh, wow. It's like a torrential downpour storm. Luckily I had candles, I guess, part of just like my ambiance anyway. So we had candles and we had flashlights going, but the power ended up never coming back on. So for the rest of the birth and labor, we were
just, you know, going with flashlights and candlelight, which was beautiful and
so
wonderful.
Cool.
It was very cool. Not that I put two and two together at the time, but now, like, reflectively, it was really awesome. But when we were laboring on the toilet and the water had broken, I could really, like, start bearing down. I remember saying to Kelly, like, I am tearing. And she goes, "You're fine. It's okay." But then we ended up moving back to my bed for the actual birth. And we came back to the bed probably maybe for 30 minutes. I think I pushed for about an hour and a half, between my bed and like being in the bathroom. And when we were in bed, my husband was like right next to my head, holding my hand. And I was laying down again, another thing, never expected to deliver a baby laying on my back with my legs up in the air kind of, experience. Like the one place they say is like the hardest way to deliver was the way that I delivered. But I had torn and it was a way to slow her down because she was coming pretty quickly. So after I pushed for, like I said, an hour and a half, I don't know how long I was in bed again, maybe another half an hour, before Olivia ends up being born. I remember Kelly saying, like, "Reach down, you can feel her baby or feel her head." And she said, she goes, "She has a full head of dark hair." And now my other two were born like little baldies, where Caden had some hair, but I thought he had a lot of hair. And in retrospect, he had like none compared to this baby. But I just remember starting to cry because through hypnobabies, they have you visualize, you know, your baby and, holding them. And that was how I visualized her. And it was the most like goosebump surreal moment. Cause I was like, "Oh my God, that's how I imagined her." And then a contraction came and I was pushing again. And Kelly said, she had asked Mike if he wanted to catch him and he had not. He was very much happy right where he was next to me. And so I had said, if he ends up not wanting to catch, I really would love to. And so she said, "Reach down and, you know, catch your baby." And so I just sat up and reached down and felt this like wet, squishy little thing and pulled her up onto my chest. And I just was, I have like goosebumps thinking about it now, like just elated and, having the feeling of having her lay on me skin to skin. I didn't get that before. So all these things that I didn't experience in my cesarean birth, that were able to happen, and just holding her and feeling her like wet head and all that hair against my skin and just having my arms wrapped around her was it was magical. And she was there and it was amazing.
Wow.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it was really, yeah, it was really cool. And at all the births I had seen from like women who had VBACs, everyone said, "I did it." And I was like, "I don't want to say I did it." Sure enough, that's exactly what I did.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, I did it. We did it. By the way, I'll include you guys. We did it. I did it. And they were like, "You did it." And her assistant was like, "You got your VBAC." Like they were like, "You got it. It happened. You did it." And I think throughout that whole experience, every time they would listen to the baby's heartbeat, I'd be like, "This is the time, you know, this is going to be the one that like, we're going to go." As much as I had tried to be so empowered and so positive and believe in my body and myself, and I did, there was just that little bit of fear that was still there. And I think at the final time, there was at one point before we transferred to the bed is when I really like had that feeling like, "Oh my God, this is going to happen. Like this is going to happen. We're going to get to do this." And then we did it and it was incredible. It really was.
Cool.
Eek!
So, baby Olivia.
Yeah. Yay.
So after
Olivia was here.
Yeah. So after she comes out, now the power is still off, right? And there's still a storm going on.
Yes. Yes, the power is out. There's the heating blankets. Like they put the towels on her and they're like, "Oh yeah, they're not so warm, are they?" Because there's no electricity. We didn't think about it. And we had our windows open, which a funny little tidbit, our neighbor across the street, like everybody's power was out. So everything was silent.
Oh.
Like my neighbors who I don't know could hear me screaming. Oh, wow. They were literally, our neighbor was pacing, I found out later, in his driveway, not knowing what to do. Like, if you should call somebody, if I was okay, oh, or what to do. When my photographer left, she said he like knocked on her window and like scared her to death. And he was like, is everything okay in there? She's like, oh yeah, it's just a home birth.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
So funny. I actually love that part of the story. And I love that, you know, that other people got to sort of bear witness to it in their own little, yeah, own little way. So she came out and we were here and there was a storm going outside.
So then when Kelly and the rest of the, you know, midwives and assistants and everybody left and it was just you and the family, was the power still out? Were you guys still with the doing candlelight and everything?
So I had torn, and with the power being out and the low lighting, I was holding Olivia, and Kelly was like, Erin, I'm really sorry, but we really have to, I think we have to go to the hospital to deal with this tear. She goes, you know, she's like, I've definitely done it. I've repaired some and I can do it, but with the light, I'm not comfortable seeing this or like doing this one here. And so she had asked her, even her intern was like, yeah, I would not. So we ended up we got to like hang here a little bit for about 2 hours, but around 11 o'clock, she was born at 9:21 at night on the 22nd. So we got our 21 or 22 and 23.
Awesome.
But we ended up transferring to the hospital, to have, actually, it was great. The OB that was on at the hospital is the one that Kelly works really closely with and felt super comfortable with. So we transferred to the hospital, and actually it turns into its own huge story, but transferred to the hospital where they tried to start doing the repair. And even while they were doing it, they felt like they actually needed to transfer to the OR to do the repair because they were having a hard time seeing it. So I looked at Kelly and I was like, well, geez, all that work to end up in the OR again. So we did. So I ended up with the like spinal and in the OR, and they ended up having to do the repair there. We ended up spending the night at the hospital and left about maybe noon, 11 o'clock or noon the next day after having her. So I didn't get, that's the sad part, but I didn't get that, like, just lay in bed, hang out, like, the three of us ending, but I got my home birth.
You did. You certainly got your home birth.
I did. Yeah, and it was great. But, and, you know, again, just another unexpected part. Like, I totally thought that I could tear. Like, I'd never had a baby before. Totally expected that was a realistic expectation. Never thought it would be what it would be, because Olivia's birth was my most difficult recovery of all three births, to be honest. It took the longest recovery time, required a physical therapy, which I don't know if people know about, because I certainly didn't know that pelvic floor physical therapy was a thing. And I would shout it from the rooftops to anybody. I think it's one of those things we don't ever talk about, is like the afterpart of birth and what, you know, birth does to our bodies. And especially if you tear and your body is recovering through that as well. Pelvic floor physical therapy was just amazing, and really helpful, but I couldn't do it for like, you know, it took me 2.5 months before like I got to the point where I could be there. It was definitely a difficult recovery, more so than I thought. Another thing, I just kind of, everyone I had known had a VBAC, like, oh, we had, you know, it's an easy birth. It was great. Like easiest recovery I've had. I expected that. And I definitely didn't have that, but that is what it is. And, recovered from it and dealt with it and moved on.
I mean, Sarah, we had you had a longer, I don't know if it was long, but you had a recovery after the tear.
Than what I would have liked. Yeah. And what I had in my mind and what I envisioned, I was like, what WTF was a lot of how I felt those first like 8 weeks. I was like, this is not what I was picturing. You know, I was still very delicate. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember going to Kelly. I had had an appointment with her late, like it was probably around 8 or a little later weeks and postpartum, and saying to her, I don't know how I'm going to go back to work. I was going back to work to teaching. I'm on my feet all day. I'm like, I can barely, like at this point, if I'm on my feet now, I'm really sore by
the time I need to make dinner. I don't know how I'm going to survive on my feet all day, because I don't have to be on my feet a lot when I'm home with this baby, because my son was still going to daycare to keep his routine. And my daughter was in grade school at that point. So I was just home with the baby, which was wonderful. And even still, just her, I was struggling. So I didn't know how I was going to do it. And she had said, you know, if we need to, we can extend your leave. We definitely have that option. We certainly have the paperwork to back that up. But again, I think the physical therapy was a huge component and really helped so that I didn't end up having to do that. So, but it was a good 12-week. I would say it was a good 12-week recovery.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy you mentioned the physical therapy, because that's something that, you know, for those listening, it may not have been on your mind before, but now you can look into the pelvic floor physical therapy and other things, which, you know, that recovery doesn't get a lot of conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
it doesn't.
Even in this podcast, we focus on the time leading up to baby coming and, you know, birthday. And then sometimes we have those episodes where we talk about some of the postpartum, but it doesn't get a ton of conversation. So, you know, just giving people, I don't know, talking space. About it and space. Yeah. And all of the things. It's important.
Yeah.
And yeah,
definitely. And I think even too, something that I wouldn't have known, but, you know, I probably would have after going, like learning that I probably would have been a good candidate even prior to, you know, having the baby. And maybe, I wonder if maybe had I done that or known about it, that I could have maybe prevented the tear or the degreeness of the tear. Like maybe it wouldn't have been as bad as what it was had I known about that. But I think, again, it's just one of those things that we don't talk about. And it's such a private and sensitive topic that, you know, I don't think it often comes up even when you're talking to your doctor, you know, in self-care, things like that. So definitely a learning. It was definitely a learning curve, but hopefully, you know, hopefully other people can benefit from that.
Oh, I know they will. Totally. Absolutely. Without question. Erin, you are so awesome. I appreciate you and your storytelling. And I love your energy that you bring to it, too.
Yeah.
Just, I feel like
Thank
I was
you.
Really there, and just all of it from Mike and Kelly, and just like the characters that you've created in your story that are real. But it's just it's so cool. I absolutely know it's going to touch other mamas and inspire and create new possibilities.
Thank you. I hope so. I was telling you guys, I just find like being able to share the story, it was so helpful to hear other people's stories. So I hope in sharing it, and maybe somebody can, you know, say, hey, like I can do that. Like that is a safe and viable option, you know, and it's available, you know, to me. And as
well, we are super grateful to you, Erin, and just appreciate you hanging out with us on the podcast.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It was great. I appreciate it.
So that concludes our official interview with Erin. However, there is a little bonus piece that I really wanted to publish at the end of our conversation. So before Sarah, Erin, and I officially hit record and started to listen to Erin's birth story, we had a cool conversation about the age difference in Erin's kids. And, you know, it just was a spur-of-the-moment question that I had, because it was extremely relevant to conversations Sarah and I have been having around when to have baby number two. So I really wanted to publish that, I don't know, a couple minutes, I think maybe 5-minute tangent conversation with Erin, because I know there's a lot of you out there who are thinking about that, who are thinking about when you want to have baby number two or baby number three. And Erin shed some really amazing light into why she chose to have her kids when she chose to have them. So enjoy this little bonus side conversation with Erin. Can I ask you a totally unrelated question?
Oh boy, where's this going?
Yeah, right. So you have a 7-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Okay.
So that means you've got a 4-year age difference between oldest and middle, and then a 2-year age difference between the middle and youngest.
Yeah.
So Sarah and I were just talking about baby number two for us, and the age difference thing has come up as like, shoot, you know, do we want to get pregnant now? Do we want to get pregnant in a year or two? Can you talk to me a little bit about what led to those decisions for you? and Mike?
Yeah, definitely. So I actually always wanted my kids to be really close. Like my sister and I are about 17 months apart. Mm. And I remember like holding Emma as a 9 months old thinking, oh my God, my mom is pregnant.
Same with my mom.
And actually when we had Emma, my husband has a group of friends that he's had since he was like school age. And through that, like all the wives, we've all become like good friends. And we were all pregnant with our first babies, all due within 2 months of each other, right at that same time. So when everybody started having their second, we just weren't ready. We just weren't in a place where we were ready to have a second as much as I wanted to. And I wanted us to be ready. I just knew we weren't. So we waited. So that was at about 2 years, right? Like that traditional 2 year, year and a half, 2 year age gap. And so by the time we were in a place when we were ready and decided to try again, Emma was four. Well, she was four, about to turn four, when I got pregnant. And I was really bummed. I was like, I just wanted them to be closer. This age group is so big. They're going to, you know, never go to school together. And they're going to always be one step ahead. So always be like this big gap ahead. But it's the most amazing thing. I couldn't be happier with the age difference. And I am so thankful that we have that age gap between them. They are super close. Mm. Emma is the most amazing big sister with him. And I feel like when I had him, I didn't go through the struggles that a lot of my friends went through by having a young toddler and a new baby, potty training and diapers and the whole thing. Because Emma was 4 and a half by the time he was born. And she got it. Mm-hmm. And she understood that sometimes I just needed to be with the baby. And she went to preschool. She's in a full day pre-K at that point. So I kept her in preschool for the last 2 months before summer. Mm-hmm. So I had that one-on-one time with him. And then I still had our summer together. I'm a teacher, so I'm off in the summers anyway. So I think the age difference is awesome. Awesome. Cool. And I was a little terrified about then now this time having like that 2.5 year age difference.
Yeah.
But it honestly has been pretty great too. I definitely am glad I had the 4 year age difference first. I think it also helps that Emma's 8 almost. And I have this, you know, we had a baby, so she understood and, she's was always great playing with my 2 year old and, you know, it's been really great. But my 2 year old really took to the baby instantly. Like he walked in the door the day after like we had her and he was like, baby Olivia. Well, he called her baby Wawa then. This baby Wawa.
Oh my God.
8 year old beelined out of the room to like, hey, see ya. Wanted nothing to do with her. But I personally loved it. I think that 4 year age gap I've loved it.
Awesome. So. I can't tell you how much you sharing that means to us because we were talking about this, I mean, night before last.
Yeah.
And everything that you said resonates because we're watching our friends who we have close friends who have a son a month older than Maya and now they're pregnant again.
Yeah.
And we've gone through the whole thing of like, oh man, you know, what about we want them to be close and this and that, but we haven't felt like it's the right timing. So we're kind of struggling with the internal feeling of it doesn't feel right, but externally, there's reasons why we wanted to
like
do
desire
number two.
And social,
so I just noticed that when you shared your kids' ages. So thanks for going on a tangent with us for a minute.
No problem. Because it's one of the things that I worried so much about that the age difference worried me so much, and it's totally worked out to be awesome. And other people I run into that have that same 4 year age gap between the first two, or if it's their only two, they all have said the same thing. They love it and they think it's great. So
okay, that's very helpful. I really 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 appreciate that.
Good. I think, you know, no matter what, it always works out.
Sure,
right? Like,
of course. And it's all about just in whatever it is, in birth two, which we'll get into, just feeling empowered in your decision and feeling supported in your decision can make all the difference regardless of what the decision is.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Sweet.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved, Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.